If you or someone you know is applying for a training position or a consultant job in the near future, this is an episode you don't want to miss. Today, my guest is Orla Baker. Orla has more than 10 years of experience in writing CVs, cover letters, and assisting her clients prepare for job interviews. In today's episode, Orla shares with us her tips for writing a CV and cover letter that will get you noticed. There are even some tactics that might surprise you. We also discuss some of the finer points when applying for a training position, consultant job, and non-clinical role. Enjoy the interview and good luck with your next application. Today's episode is sponsored by Tego Medical Indemnity Insurance. As a valued listener of my podcast, you will get a 5% discount off your premium. For most of us, indemnity insurance is our biggest fixed cost of practice. But when was the last time you took a look at the coverage and cost of your policy? Many of us are still with the same insurer we joined in med school or intern year. Last year, I reviewed my policy and discovered Tego. Tego's policy was significantly cheaper and new clients get an extra 2 months free in their first year. If you're new to private practice, you might even qualify for 4 years of discounted premiums. Tego's medico-legal support and advisory is available 24/7 and they are backed by Berkshire Hathaway Specialty Insurance. Discover why thousands of doctors are insured by Tego by visiting tego.com.au. That's tego.com.au. Hey, I'm Andrew, and this is the Medical Money Podcast, where we talk about personal finance, investing, and other random topics to make you a happier human. If you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review and share the episode with someone you care about. You can connect with me via my blog, medicalmoney.com, and just remember that the content of this podcast is general in nature and not personal financial advice. Podcast guests are sharing their own opinions and may hold positions in companies discussed. Please seek professional advice before making any financial decision and always read the product disclosure statements. Orla, thanks for taking the time to join me today. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
I'm very interested to listen to what you have to say, because my practice manager's asked us all to update our resumes and CVs, and so I haven't done mine for quite a number of years, so it'd be good to know what's happening in the marketplace at the moment, even though I'm not really applying for anything. But on the other hand, it's also the start of a new year, and a number of my listeners will be hoping to score a consultant job or a training position, and some might even be considering non-clinical roles. So today, we're going to get your insights and recommendations regarding resumes, CVs, and cover letters. Before we explore each of these, can you tell us about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a consultant and I have quite a very diverse background, professional background, I guess, which puts me in quite a unique position to help people with their job applications. So my experience, I used to work for a large international development company recruiting teams for multi-million dollar tenders, and I've worked for the Commonwealth government and state governments in not-for-profits, and, you know, interesting enough as well, I'm a teacher by training. So I've taught in the most remote Indigenous school in Australia, and I've also taught street kids in Melbourne. So I guess that's kind of brings into my passion is why I love working with people and my clients and really seeing them get results. So in terms of specific experience, my experience really began when I worked for that international development company. So in that role, I had to put together really large teams. So, and they were very varied consultants. So some were experts in health or in law and social justice. And so we put together teams to go and work on an international aid project. And often these projects were worth $250 million up to $250 million. So it was quite a high stakes environment. And so we wrote their CVs and then we positioned them inside the tender so that they were seen as best suited for the role. And also as part of that, senior, if we got through that stage, as well as, you know, writing an approach to the project, we were invited to a technical assessment panel. So we had to prepare those individuals to sit in front of very senior public servants in the Australian government, and then also very senior public servants within the partner government. So the government of Papua New Guinea or the government of Fiji. So it's quite high stakes, very high pressured environment for those individuals. So really working with them to build their capacity to be able to interview exceptionally well doing that. So Also of note, I guess, you know, I don't ever like mentioning it, but it is probably quite relevant to your audience. So my partner is also a doctor. So I have real firsthand experience understanding medical training pathways. So I feel like I've lived through, you know, the resident years, going through into registrar years, set interview training process, fellowship exams. And I often joke with them and ask my partner, you know, where was my fellowship of support through after they got their fellowship exams? So, you know, I understood that. And that's sort of how my business really commenced, because I had this skill set and then I got lots of referrals from that medical environment. Yeah.
Oh, very good. So you've been through sort of a corporate and public health type setup as well as, and obviously seen the whole training process. You should be asking for that like fellowship gift. Yeah. My wife kind of wrung a few handbags out of me and a trip to Paris at the end of my fellowship.
Well, I think maybe I should give her a call, Andrew, chat to her about that. It sounds like she's very clever there. Yeah, I guess I've, you know, really experienced, understood doctors through that varying different stages of their career. So, you know, I've worked in the medical school lecturing there. I've also worked, you know, with interns, residents and registrars and new fellows. So yeah, understanding that whole process from an outsider perspective, and I make that really clear, like, you know, I'm not medical at all, but I understand it from an outside perspective with my skill set.
So have you been involved in the hiring side of things as well? Was it in the sourcing and then applying, doing the application process for people going for these funded positions?
Yeah, so hiring in those, not in the medical industry, but, you know, in other industries, yes, yeah.
Yep. But that's relevant for people looking at clinical careers in particular as second careers as well, along with their, you know, consultancy and fellowships. Good. And so let's talk a bit about CVs and resumes and cover letters. Can you explain the difference between each and what is the purpose of each of those?
Yeah. So let's sort of start with CVs. So, you know, the term CV resume is really interchangeable in Australia, but in the US they say CV is a real static document and resume is a document that's tailored to specific roles and is more competency based, you know, but we use that term interchangeably here. So the CV resume is a written overview of your skills, your education, your work experience, your volunteer experience, and of course your professional development and you know, affiliation and memberships. So in terms of critical elements, you know, it's really essential that, you know, you really outline clearly what all of those things are. So I start with an executive summary. So that is completely tailored to the role that you're going for. That executive summary, it only has to be a few lines. You include your qualifications, your work experience in reverse chronological order, so obviously the most recent first, and it needs to detail in terms of like specific responsibilities that you've held within each one of your roles. And then, you know, I also talk to my clients about including key achievements. So why is this? Because, you know, you can list off roles and responsibilities and, you know, in medicine it's a given that, you know, you all sort of do the same, but where have you exceeded expectations? So it's really important to highlight that. And then, you know, you write your professional development and your membership and affiliation and always include referees. So for me, when I review a CV that doesn't have a referee listed, it's sort of a red flag for me, because you want to always be open and transparent about including those in your documents.
Okay. And those referees should be current as well, should they? So you're not really going to want referees who were your supervisors of training 15 years ago during your first year of
Yeah, that's training. Right. Exactly. They have to be absolutely relevant and absolutely relevantly comment on your skills and expertise that, you know, that are specific to the role that you're applying for as well. That's really, really critical. Yeah.
And so there's referees. Do you find that it's, I suppose it should be relevant to the role, but how many should you have on there? And is it good to have kind of like a socially type referee? Like, you know, if you've volunteered at the local footy club or netball club, that there's someone out there who will speak on the non-medical and more the social side of things?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I guess it depends on, you know, why the referees in terms of what role you're going for, because some roles have specific, you know, requirements about what type of referees they want included. So let's use the example of not having any requirements. I would say at least two, and that, yeah, if you want to sort of have an edge in terms of if your edge is about leadership skills and values, then maybe, yes, include somebody that, you know, can demonstrate that on your CV. Or if you've volunteered for a long time with a not-for-profit and you've sat on their board, then including the CEO of that not-for-profit would be a really good idea too.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned with the referees. I'm thinking back to when I was applying for the anaesthetic training program back in 2008, I think it was. I had a referee and I hadn't really like checked on the social kind of perspective that about my referee. And then it came to the when I did the interview, they were like, you probably shouldn't put this person down because in the industry, they're not necessarily of high standing. Yes. So do we, like, people recommended to do a background check on the referees, just a Google search, make sure they haven't been put in prison or done anything shady?
Yeah, actually, I was going to talk about that later on, I think. You know, so, you know, it's really important and I've seen it go really wrong. Like, you know, it's amazing that they alerted you to that because often you don't get alerted to things like that. But I've seen it where there's been exceptional clinicians and they just use the wrong type of referee. Well, the referee didn't actually remember them, you know. And I really advocate for checking in with your referee just before you're going to be reference checked, and you do it in a really sensitive and polite manner and talk about, you know, I've just, you know, applied for this and I've listed you as, you know, as we've previously discussed, I've listed you. These are the kind of key things that I'm really selling myself in. You know, just give them, you know, because they would be a referee most likely on numerous applications. So it's really important to check in, have so that you're at forefront of their mind as well. Yeah.
Yep. So let them know if you're applying for a role so they're not caught off guard.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, they can actually say, I don't want to give a reference, and you would never know as well. So, you know, really making sure that they're appropriate for you is, you know, and there's like for the SET program, you know, references are worth quite a lot as a percentage to get into that program. So you don't want to hedge your bets.
Yeah. And so what are some of the most current errors or omissions that you see with people who come to you to get help preparing their CVs and applications?
Yeah, sure. So in terms of a CV, you know, inconsistent formatting. If you pick a format, you know, everyone, I get a lot of clients coming to me going, what is the magical format? Like, you know, what's a magical template? They think it's the answer to everything. And, there, you know, the truth is there isn't necessarily a magical template, but whatever you use, you have to stick to it and make sure it's absolutely consistent throughout the entire document. And I really advocate for removing jargon or industry-specific terminology, you know, that makes no sense to anyone outside of your immediate discipline. And why do I do that? Is because often the person reading your CV could not be medical. Like they could be a HR person sitting inside an office in the hospital. And, yeah, they would be familiar with terminology, but you can't assume that. So really spelling everything out. Other things in terms of experience, I often see just listing of roles. Like, you know, I was a resident and I did these rotations and then that's it. Now, that's actually not enough. Like, yeah, it's great that you've listed it all and I can see in chronological order, but going back to what I previously said about, you know, expanding on what the responsibilities are and what your key achievements were within each one of those roles. And then, you know, listing high schools that you attended and your TER score. You know, like I see that a lot with medical professionals that list their TER score, and I think it's because, you know, it was a significant achievement. But let's use significant achievements from the last 2, 3, 5, 6 years rather than 20 plus years ago. I mean, we all know that, you know, you're a doctor, you would have done significantly well at school. So it's just a waste of space, really, you know. And, you know, spend, I guess, you know, that's it, really. Spending time really highlighting those key achievements will put you outside of the box in terms of other candidates, who are applying.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I sent you my resume and it, or CV and it hadn't been updated for about 10 years. So it was probably okay when the kind of word came out, well, the typewriter was still being used. Yeah. But also I think it's kind of like it has the elements. It's like rocking up to a ball with a suit that you just haven't ironed yet. It kind of has everything there, but it's just not crisp.
Yes, that's right.
It's nice to have something that's that's set up a bit nicer when you have it in. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, and so how often should we be updating our CV? Do you think it's something everyone should just do like every year and so that way they can remember the key things that they've actually done? or is it just when the next, you know, big application is required?
Yeah, so I, you know, if you're in the hospital system and you're doing regular rotations in the hospital system, I'd recommend that you do it after each rotation. You know, you are busy, you are going to forget, you know, those key achievements potentially and the elements involved in each one of those roles. So, you know, did you supervise medical students, residents? Did you do a presentation of some research key findings? Those kind of things can potentially get forgotten in over the scheme of, over the period of a year. If you are not in like a, in a rotation kind of system, yearly is fine. And then I also advocate, you know, a good time to do that is at tax time, because, you know, you're going to be doing your taxes anyway. It's a little bit painful. Just make it a little bit extra painful and just update your CV as well. And it's a good reminder to do it then.
That makes sense. Yep. And how about cover letters? So what is a cover letter and how does it differ from a CV?
Yeah, so a cover letter really is the first point of contact that you have. And it's a marketing tool and communicates to your employer what drives you and really highlights your experience to them. It's you know, it's an opportunity to showcase what you've done and importantly, that you've done your research on your future employer. You know, so you've researched about the hospital, you've researched about that practice that you're applying for, and you're already immersed in their values, their mission, their vision, and their, you know, their statement of why they're positioned within the community the way they are. So that will really enable you to stand out from the crowd.
And so what sort of length should a cover letter be in? Is there a specific format?
Yeah, so I your letter format, and I just say no more than a page, and, you know, go by the bank letter format and, you know, use that as your template and have it consistent.
So this one is much more specific for the job role that you're applying than the CV, isn't it?
Which that's right. Which
is just a walkthrough.
Yeah, so you really want to be highlighting Sorry, Andrew.
No, there you go. Sorry.
Yeah, so you really want to be highlighting some key achievements that you've done in each in the cover letter, maybe two or three, that position you really well and matches that position description that you're applying for in there as well.
And what's your take on photos and including those in either your CV or your cover letter?
So I'm an advocate for absolutely no photos. I really encourage my clients to avoid, you know, unconscious bias, and we all have a role to play in that, and you just never know where that could land for you.
Okay, let's talk a bit about applications. So let's walk through three different scenarios which might be relevant to my listeners. So the first will be like getting into a training program, the second, applying for a consultant position, and then we'll talk about applying for a non-clinical role.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, there's a big training bottleneck with a huge number of graduates from the medical schools with very few training positions by proportion. I think, remember in some recent study, it was like there was one advanced training spot for every two or two and a half medical school graduates or interns that were coming through. For prospective trainees looking at getting into a competitive training program, what's your advice to them when they do their application for like set programs?
Yeah, so ensure that you meet all the requirements, and I'm sure that that is a given. You know, review the college values and the position description, and, you know, really understand what they're looking for and tailor your CV and your cover letter to meet those. That is really, really critical. You've got to think beyond, you know, I think it's really easy to think, oh, you know, that's my boss and I see them do their duties every day and that's what's required, but it's more than that. So really understanding that. You know, you've got to balance your clinical work, your teaching and your research. And I think critically it's really important to find a mentor. So somebody, you know, that you can ask for advice and support you in positioning yourself within the application process. Bearing in mind, you know, Andrew, that they might have gone through the process, you know, years before you. So finding somebody that's recently gone through the process would be really, really good. You know, check in. I think we just talked about this, you know, earlier, that, you know, you've got to check in with your referees. You know, a big weight comes down to those referees. So really making sure that they remember you and understand your key attributes and can really sell those for you. is really important. And then, you know, your CV and cover letter need to be exceptional and well written and outline all the things that we've just talked about as well. Especially because potentially initially to get into those programs, it's probably not going to be a clinical person reading those documents. Make it really easy for them to read the document. You know, sometimes I see these really flash looking, you know, coloured, like amazing, you know, more than clip art, but like, you know, Canva style CVs, and it's just so overwhelming to review. I actually say, like, to clients, no, you just got to scrap that. It's way too overwhelming and it's too hard to read. Just make it really easy for the person reading it to review. And approach the entire process like nobody knows you. So state the obvious, as it might not be obvious to them as well. So do you want me to go into –
How about for is there a way to kind of buff up your CV and cover letter in, you know, the months leading up to it with just a few small things that people can, you know, do but also add value onto that?
Yeah.
Just so, in the quick lead-up time?
Yeah, like thinking about what the values are of that college and go and look and review them and think, where have I achieved those? How am I going to highlight those in my CV? How can I highlight them against those key achievements? So, you know, matching them all in together into your CV and your cover letter would be really good. And then when you're giving an example inside your cover letter, using a methodology called STAR, Situation, Task, Action, Result, you'll be able to clearly outline that experience, like what you've done in a situation, the action you took and the result as a result of the action. So really highlighting why you're in the best position for the spot on that training program.
That's a really good one. So just that STAR phrase can be used in just one or two phrases or sentences to really target that position.
That's right.
And highlighting your experiences.
Yeah, okay. In your cover letter.
You mentioned about making it readable by a non-medical person. How do you see kind of technology and AI and robots in terms of reading things just to filter at the beginning? Is that something that's happening now is it not quite there yet?
No, absolutely. So big companies are certainly using AI to scan documents. So it's really essential. I always say to my clients that if they're using specific terminology inside their position description, and we need to ensure that we're using that same terminology inside our CV and cover letter as well. So that if they are, and you never know that they are, but you can assume that those big, large multinational companies are, that your documents are going to be picked up.
And you mentioned briefly format, but how about font? Is that a big deal? Are there fonts which you should definitely not have? Probably Wingdings is not one to use.
I don't know, Comic Sans, but that's, again, maybe my unconscious bias from, like, year seven projects. You know, I just think something that's really easy to be read and, you know, size 11, size 12. And remember, they're not going to be reviewing it on a screen, so they're going to be printing it off. And I always assume it's going to be printed off in black and white. It's not going to be printed in colour.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. Anything else for trainees applying for, people applying for training programs?
I think that's about it there.
Okay, good. And so if we move on to, say, new fellows, people looking for a role as, say, a public consultant, either part-time or full-time, what advice do you have for them in putting together their CVs and cover letters?
Yeah, sure. So this is really competitive, as you would know. So everyone's done the same thing to become a consultant. You're all on that level playing field. So it's about identifying what makes you different and mention it and really sell it. So, you know, is that research? Is that teaching? Is that additional community engagement? How have you achieved this, and how is it relevant to the role that you're going for? You know, how have you had leadership roles before, and how is that relevant again to that consultant role that you're applying for? It's really critical that you do your research about the hospital or about the organisation or about, you know, the clinic that you're applying for. You really have to understand how they live and breathe. And it's really, really important because it makes you interested. It makes you look like you're invested in the organization because you are, because you want a job and you want to do what you've been trained to do for so many years. You know, you're almost there. So really, really do your research. Hospitals. So I did a bit of research myself because I'm not a doctor. So I actually just spoke to somebody recently who's just recently fellowed. And they gave me some exceptional advice, you know, and this fellow said to me, you know, unit directors are really reticent to hire somebody who hasn't previously worked on the unit. So that's really important to know. So if you really want to work in a specific hospital on a specific unit, then do a rotation there if you can and get to know the staff, because often, you know, this person was saying to me, often, you know, you've all done exceptional things. It's personality that really gets you over the line. Yes, you have to go through the process and win on merit, but it is a lot to do with personality. They need to know that you can work as part of that team and that also you want to work there long term as well. So to do that, you need to figure out how you'll fit into the team. So the team will have a certain makeup. You know, there'll be certain personalities within that team. So where do you fit in amongst all those personalities? And they won't want to hire all the same types of people either. So what's your unique selling point amongst the team? And you've got to play that.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yep.
Yeah, it's just got to play that as a key attribute. In your application, in that cover letter, and then also in that executive summary. Obviously, you can't talk about attributes within your actual CV, but that where you talk about it is in with your executive summary and your cover letter. You have to read the annual report of the hospital and understand its values, its mission, its vision. You know, and I'm just, you know, immerse yourself in the culture of that organisation. So it's so easy to hire you. Look, she already knows exactly how we operate. She understands everything. Look, she's just an easy hire. She's got a fantastic personality. She knows and understands the vision of the hospital and what we're wanting to achieve in the next, you know, 5-10 years. It's easy. It's effortless. So, and in terms of interview,
Yeah, no, do public hospitals have annual reports for people to read? I know the private ones tend to.
Yeah, so I was told, yeah, they do, yeah. So this fellow had access to an annual report, yeah, of the hospital and read that, yeah.
You mentioned about attributes. So what do you mean by attributes? And you said they weren't to be put into a CV.
So what I mean, like, you know, what are your you don't write about in your CV, you know, you don't use my general rule is that you don't use pronouns or you don't use I. So it's kept really, you know, for want of a better term, clinical. So it's, you know, all those key responsibilities that you did and the achievements that you had. Attributes and the tailoring of what you are and how you operate, that's more of a personal application of then how you deliver those responsibilities, and they go in your cover letter. And they can also be you.
Okay, right. So your cover letter can be more subjective.
And it's personal. Yeah. So this is why I want to apply for this job. This is what I bring to this role. You know, this is my experience in my previous positions. And then you can see a further expansion of those in my CV or I've outlined them. Yeah. So in terms of
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. So in terms of some practical tips, say, for example, you know, you're really wanting to apply for a unit in a hospital and you haven't worked there, it's really important that, you know, you meet with the head of the unit, if you can, and the NUM and go for a tour of the unit with the NUM and really understand how it works, what their hot buttons are and how you might fit in within that team. So, again, it's seen as you're really investing and you're really interested in being a part of that process and investing into the team. And that's really critical. And that was another piece of advice that I really thought was really out of the box and really shows how much, and it also gives you an opportunity to sell yourself in addition to your CV and your cover letter slightly. You know, you're not going to go in there with well-prepared script, obviously, but when the opportunity arises, you'll be able to slip into conversation oh, yes, you know, I've had an opportunity in leading teams and doing this, and this is something that I found that really worked well for me, you know, if it's relevant to the conversation, you know, take that opportunity to do so.
So you would say, say you're applying for a consultant position that you might find on Seek or hear about from, you know, other colleagues at a hospital you haven't been to before. So you're saying that it's worth contacting head of department and asking for a hospital tour to have a look around. And obviously that allows you to get yourself in the front door and make yourself memorable when they read the list of applications later on. Okay.
And this was some advice that I got from a recent fellow. And, you know, obviously it might not always be appropriate and all they can say is no. You know, so it's like, that's it. If it's not, they can't facilitate it, then that's okay. But, you know, it's worth a try, definitely, because it comes back down to that personality.
Presumably you get,
you know, so.
Yeah, presumably you get brownie points for showing initiative.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. An investment in what you're applying for. Yeah. And I think it's actually also really important to call somebody who's gone through that process recently, because, you know, there will be a curly question. There always is a curly question. And, you know, they're going to change their questions because they're going to know that people will make calls. But, you know, be prepared for the types of curly questions that they might ask you, because there's always one. And having a conversation with somebody who's been through it might alleviate some of your anxiety around that interview.
Okay. And so that way you can look at, say, who in that department, who might have been the most recent hires in the last 1 to 3 years, and then give them a check in with them, have a coffee with them and ask them.
Yeah, if you can. Or, you know,
what went down.
Exactly. Yeah. Or utilize your network. You know, I'm sure you would know people who have gone through that interview process recently and, you know, connect with them. Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, and it's really, really important to do that, because, you know, they can only, again, say no. Like, they're not going to give you that information. But, and the other thing that's important to know is that those really senior positions often get hired by senior hospital executives they'll be clinical people, but there might be non-clinical people on the panel. So, again, that comes back down to what I was saying before, really being clear and explicit about what you've done medically as well. It's really important. And those people are really interested in how you're going to achieve those vision, mission, strategic plan of the hospital. That's what they're really interested in. So hitting them with that information is really critical as well.
Yeah, okay. Anything else for applying for consultant roles?
Well, I did get some advice from this fellow was saying to me that, you know, especially, you know, apply for everything, because often you think that, you know, you have to have all your ducks lined up in an order and you know, oh, I don't meet all the requirements. But, and, you know, many women think that especially. And so put your application in and give it a go. And it's absolutely experience. You know, interviewing, you might not get it the first time round, but interviewing is a skill. It's absolutely a skill, and it's experience. And the more of you have of it, the more comfortable you will be in going through the process.
Okay, good. And so on to our third scenario. So some of us have been in our careers for a number of years and like the idea of branching out into board or advisory type roles. And this portfolio career setup seems to be growing in popularity. How does our CV and application need to be altered for these non-clinical type roles?
So, you know, I've mentioned it, but, you know, you really have to, you know, remove a lot of that clinical terminology and explain everything. So if you've got like, and also explain the clinical roles that you've held, because a resident and a registrar means nothing to somebody in finance or governance or law. It generally, you know, they don't understand the hierarchy of things. So understanding what potentially a resident is responsible for within the hospital and, you know, the amount of patients and, you know, the amount of wards, etc., is really critical, because that shows a lot about the skills that you bring to the board. So understanding that and explaining the size of the hospitals that you've worked in, you know, how many beds they had, how many units they had, you know, was it a big teaching hospital as well? So just providing a lot of context to that experience, and obviously highlighting your key achievements within each one of those roles. And so I'll just say again, I feel like a bit of a broken record, but, you know, you really have to understand that organisation that you're going for, you know, understand, you know, what is it setting out to achieve? What is its strategic plan? What does their current board look like if it is a board role? Because, you know, boards are diverse and they don't want to keep hiring the same types of people. So how will you fit in and position yourself amongst that board is really critical.
How about, like, a lot of guys are going for roles in now as medical advisors for, say, biotech or, you know, startups in the technology space. The other one is, say, insurance companies is one which a lot of guys are branching out for, you know, one or two days a week or even moving out full-time from things like GP space. Have you had much experience in applying in those non-clinical roles?
Yeah, so I've seen, like, you know, very similar is someone who was going for one role and jumping completely to a different area of medicine, which would be very similar. You've really got to understand, break down that position description and really look at what are they asking for and then try and match that across into your CV. So, you know, that comes down to what I was saying is really highlighting specifically where you've carried out, like, what are your duties in each one of those things, and really not assuming that we know and understand that. And then also, what were the levels of responsibility? Like, if this role has a significant level of responsibility for, you know, a huge amount of research, you know, has that ever been relevant to you in your previous roles? Or if does it have a, you know, a huge amount of responsibility for clinical trials? Has there ever been, you know, have you conducted any smaller clinical trials? So you really have to try and match how am I appropriate for this job? Does that make sense? Because you always really want it to be easy for the person reviewing it. Always want to make it easy, really spelling it out, making it easy.
Yeah, because these are really to get you to the interview stage, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely.
Through the door.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. Can you look too busy on paper? Like, it's really nice to highlight your, you know, all the things that you've done and all the achievements you've had. But when they kind of look at what you're doing right now, and if you're doing a public job plus a private practice role plus sitting on a board and now you're applying for this other thing, can that be detrimental?
No, I don't think so. You know, but yeah, I think you've got to highlight, I think you've got to review every role that you're going for on its own merit, and have a look at it from a strategic perspective. But no, I have given advice recently to a client who wasn't medical, but, you know, two roles came up at the same time within the organization. And he said to me, well, I really want to go for both. What do you think? And I said, I think you've got to be really careful there, because I think you've got to be careful about saying, it just looks like, give me any job. You know, you've got to be really careful about positioning yourself, because then you don't seem authentic in what you've already said. Yeah. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
Yeah. So yep, I think that makes sense. Yeah.
Because it's not like, yeah, I remember kind of, you know, looking for jobs when I was like 50 and just taking 50 printouts of my like my resume back then, and just walking into Jeans West and into Colorado and into Subway and everywhere and just handed out the same thing.
You got any hours?
It's a bit different.
Yes, and you don't want to look like that, you know. Like, you do have your stack of CVs under your hand, and of course everybody knows that you're applying across multiple places, but you want to look like you're just 100% invested in their organization. Like, I think, you know, I'm just trying to think about, in summary, you know, I think there are three key things that you all, you know, should remember always, is understand that positioning of the role and the organization's, you know, vision, mission, values, strategic plan or the annual report. Sell yourself. So explain your roles that you've held and the elements within each of these roles, your key achievements and what makes you stand out. And then, you know, your documentation, you know, it has to be well written, easy to follow, and have medical jargon explained and state the obvious to that HR professional. Like, if I was going to say those three things, would be my really big takeaways from the process.
Okay, very good. And so say someone listening to this podcast wants to get their CV constructed or overhauled or just had someone to look at it, how can you help them and what's the process and timeframes that they should look at?
Yeah, sure. So they can connect with me via email at orla@orlaconsulting.co or my website. And I say that, you know, when we work together, it's a partnership, and you know that's really outlined from the start that it's a process that we work through together. And why is that? Because it's not something that you can just send me and then expect, you know, this magical document to appear, you know, a few days later. It's actually a process where I need to, you know, maybe reformat the CV and then really get an idea of really specifically what you've done and how it meets that position description. So that's a process. And that often takes about an hour on the phone. And then I do up to three rounds of edits with you. So your CV is looking really polished. And that process can go over a week. And, you know, obviously the longer the better. And in some circumstances I can do a really quick turnaround, but, you know, that's kind of on an as-needs basis.
Yeah, so the more time people give, the better quality editing and touching up you can do.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's better for you as
and
well.
On top of, what other services do you offer? Do you do like interview training and practice as well?
Yes, I do. So I do a lot of interview training and practice, and that's something that I really enjoy doing because I can really see the growth of my clients. And I write tenders and grants. I've written award applications for organisations and small businesses who are time poor and they don't necessarily have that expertise in-house, and I do lots of copywriting for a wide range of clients, including clinics and, you know, other clients in other industries. So, yeah.
Well, very good. Thank you very much for your time today. I'll make sure I put your email address and your website in the show notes as well. I definitely learned a lot because I haven't had to apply for anything for quite a long time. Oh. So it's been good to hear how the changes are these days.
Oh, I'm so pleased, Andrew. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you very much. Have a great afternoon.
Okay. Bye-bye. See you. Bye.
Thanks for hanging out with me today. If you learned something new, please share the episode with your family and friends. I'd love to get your feedback, so send questions, comments, and recommendations to me at andrew@medicalmoney.com. See you in the next episode.